Hello, my soul-seeking friends. It's Shanna. Thank you so much for listening to Sense of Soul podcast, enlightening conversations with like-minded souls from around the world, sharing their journey of finding their light within, turning pain into purpose, and awakening to their true sense of soul. If you like what you hear, show me some love and rate, like, and subscribe. And consider becoming a Sense of Soul Patreon member, where you will get ad-free episodes, monthly circles, and much more. Now go grab your coffee, open your mind, heart, and soul. It's time to awaken. Today on Sense of Soul, we have Janine Rashidi. She is an alternative health and wellness practitioner, a doctor of Ayurveda, and the founder of Goodbye Tension. Janine focuses on elevating the core of physical, digestive, emotional, and mental tension. Janine is the author of the book and workbook, Abundance Beyond Trauma, Discovering Your Courage for Change and Commitment to Yourself. And Janine's commitment to herself has since empowered and inspired her clients toward awakening the healer within for the past 20 years. She's joining us today to tell us about her mission to revolutionize how we relate harmoniously between the heart and mind after the disconnect from trauma and adverse life experiences. Life can be tough, and there's a lot going on in the world. So please welcome Janine to help us find the light in the dark. Thanks so much, Janine, for joining me today. I'm super excited to have you and to learn more about how we can move beyond trauma.
You know, how to move beyond this, the title of your book, Moving Beyond the Trauma of Not Just Your Own Trauma, but there's a collective trauma, right? There's an ancestral trauma. We're dealing with a lot of it on many levels.
Well, and I think that's why the biggest message that I, you know, try to get out is how important it is to have a relationship with yourself and really understand, you know, all of your light, your dark, your shadow, you know, the things that the dysfunctions that you have, the beliefs that you have, because that's what you're bringing to your other relationships. Then those relationships go out into the community and that affects the community. Then the community goes out into the world and that affects the world. So it still is coming back to our individual, you know, sense of self and the relationship that we have with ourself. I really believe that that's really the core wound here is looking at that, you know, and being willing to just see the parts of us that maybe we don't want to look at, you know, because it's not easy. Nobody wants to see the dark side, you know, but when you understand why it's there or how it's come to be, then you can relate with it differently. But when you, you know, turn a blind eye to it, it will start coming up through your actions. You know, it's, you're being led basically through your subconscious. So, you know, your actions are basically showing what's really going on, even though you may not want to be doing that. That's what will naturally happen because that's the content that's there.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And even you saying that, I'm connecting again with my ancestry, right? And how much of the trauma in the ancestry was covered up. Yes. And so yet it was still living out in our family. It was still living out in my genes and me and the patterns. Yeah. And that's been kind of like the big message I've gotten over the past year or so is that, yes, it starts individually, but it's so deep within that.
Yeah, it is. And I do believe that when we heal something within ourselves, it actually has the ability to heal the familial line, both backwards and forwards. But again, it's going to take, you know, courageous individuals who are willing to say, hey, like in my family line, you know, incest and abuse are huge. You know, we've got to be willing to call it out, you know, and look at it and go, okay, these are the things that are in our family line. How do we stop that? Prevent ourselves going into relationships that I did that, you know, just kept the cycle going and going. No, I remember, you know, coming from like when you were talking about, you know, your ancestry, my first trip to India, I'm mostly British. So I went to the Gandhi Museum. And I knew that the British had invaded, but I had not understood to what extent. And the Gandhi Museum actually depicted it so well. And I was the only Caucasian in there at the time. And I felt like I had to apologize to every Indian who came in there for my ancestors. There was just this deep feeling of who did we think we were by doing such a thing? You know, so I think when those of us who have, you know, the courage to stand up and say, you know, that wasn't right. And I can't make up for my ancestors, but I can make sure that I don't carry that on. I think that's where real change is going to happen. And when you have children, recognizing that they will have some of that too, and being able to support them into making those positive changes so that they don't carry on that dysfunction that comes through the familial line as well.
Oh, I can't agree more. That's exactly how I feel. And I do think that it does take some bravery. You know, I think it does take a special courageous person who's willing to be present in the world. You know, beginning of my journey, took some mindfulness classes that really kind of set my whole journey. It was like one of the first paths of awakening. And just noticing everything, everything. I had never noticed it before. It's like, but I've passed it a million times. How can I have never seen the beauty in this or have heard this lyric in this song or, you know, notice that you have a freckle right here, you know, just being so present with people and also nature and everything. We're so busy.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see something change around busyness. I know like the area I live in, people are just working themselves to death because it's an expensive area. And there needs to be some sort of shift or change because it's not sustainable. You know, if we're working ourselves just to get to the point of retirement, but we're so ill, we can't do anything. What was the point? You know what I mean? You missed out on all of the beautiful moments. Maybe you were working and you weren't able to be with your kids, you know, or you were so focused on the monetary that you forgot, you know, your heart, things like that. Like a big shift really needs to happen. And I, you know, I know as time goes on, there are more shifts that are happening. More people are you know, becoming more awake to this, but something, you know, needs to change. It's not sustainable.
Right. I heard that, you know, there are some places, I want to say Belgium, but I'm not really sure. There's some places who have made changes where they're only having like 4-day work weeks. And my daughter was just asking me to find the petition here in Colorado in her district to sign up for them to only have a 4-day school week. And there are a lot of schools here in Colorado that are already doing that and that they are talking about that.
Yeah.
Which I think is good. I mean, I'm, you know, even come to the point where I really don't agree with homework because, you know, they go to school like however many hours, a long day, you know, for children. And then they come home, have to stress about that. And then yet, you know, there's still, you know, stuff you have to do around the house. There's maybe activities that you want to do after school, which, you know, suicide's pretty high in children nowadays. So
yeah,
they really should take a look at, you know, how much they're putting on these kids.
I agree. Yeah, no, I think the whole forcing a kid to do homework is traumatic. I remember when my girls were growing up and thinking this can't be the method, you know, and even, you know, well, me growing up, I actually enjoyed doing homework, but that was because it was an escape from what was happening at home, you know, but when a child doesn't need to escape, but they're being forced to do something that they don't want to do, especially at the younger years, what are we teaching our kids with that? You know, sure, there's other ways that we could teach discipline, not forcing kids to do things that they don't want to do and isn't necessary, especially if they're spending 6 to 8 hours a day at school.
Especially when they could be learning life skills instead of some of the stuff that they'll never use.
Right.
So, yeah, I totally agree with you and kind of put strain on a relationship between parent and child as well. Yeah, here at my house, that's always been an issue, I think, with all my kids. But yeah, these younger generations, they're less conditioned, but yet they're fighting against a system. So it's like really this battle. And my younger kids have very, very valid points about some of the things that they see. Why are we doing that? you know, what is the purpose of this? I'm like, really? I don't know. We just did it and we didn't ask questions, but you're good to ask questions. And, you know, I see them changing the world. So hopefully one day, you know, those things will change. So tell me about, though, if you don't mind, a little bit about your background. You've kind of mentioned it a little bit, you know, maybe just how you landed in this journey on your path.
Well, so I was born into drug addiction and lots of abuse, every type, physical, mental, emotional, psychological, and sexual. And I ran away from home when I was 15 years old. I was a straight A student destined for medical school. And I just felt like, you know, I was one of those kids that questioned, like, where's the class that's going to teach me to deal with what's going on at home? Because algebra is not going to help me figure out what's going on at home, you know? And there wasn't a class for that. And I thought, well, anything would be better than what's happening here. And, but that's a very naive way to think, especially as a 15-year-old. So I ran away from home. I learned how to live homeless. And that's actually where I ended up meeting who became my first husband. And this is a perfect example of if you don't heal your wounds, you end up going into the same type of dynamic, not because you want to, but because subconsciously that's what you're basically attracting because that's all you know. So I ended up, you know, marrying a man who was 17 years my senior. So I was 15, he was 32, and I had two children with him. And he essentially became the same like my parents were, you know, addicted to the same drug, which was methamphetamines, same type of behaviors. And so it took me a long time to get out of that dynamic. It was really a bad domestic situation. And I wrote about that a little bit in my book. I tried to write my book in a way that would not give trauma survivors more trauma, but instead try to write it in a way that provides inspiration that you can change your life no matter what the circumstance. But that was a really hard one. It took years and years of multiple attempts to try and leave. And finally, my daughters and I were able to leave. They were 4 and 8, I believe. And that's when I realized the patterns had all repeated themselves. And that was my intention when I ran away from home, was to get away from that, but I went right back into it. So I had gotten a hold of a book by Stephen Covey called 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And that book completely changed my life. It was the first time I had ever heard the word self-mastery, where I had first heard the word interdependent when it came to relationships. And still, you know, at that point, did not comprehend well, what is that exactly? So when I left the first marriage, immediately we got into counseling. And my goal was that this cycle would not repeat for my children in their intimate relationships or any relationships, and then their children and so on. So, you know, that was 20 years ago. And through that journey, I, you know, originally started out in sales and marketing. That was the job I was in before I left. And when I had left my first husband, I needed a profession that basically I could create my own hours. And since I already had a sales background, I thought, okay, I could probably figure out how to create my own business. I just need to figure out what business. And so I decided to go into massage therapy. I had never had a massage in my life. It just seemed like a logical decision. So here I am, I'm going through massage school. And so I'm working, you know, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then, or no, I'm going to school from 6 to 10. And then I'm working from 10 to 5. And then I'm seeing clients on the side to try to make money from basically 7 to 10. And then I would just wake up and do it all over again. And it was through the massage school that I first noticed that all of these memories in my body, you know, started showing up every time I would get a massage. And at first, you know, I would just pass out. It would just be too much. And then I'd wake up all groggy, but somehow I would feel better. And eventually I did, you know, I opened up my own practice, which is called Goodbye Tension. And people naturally started talking about their trauma on the table. And I questioned, well, who am I to be helping people with their trauma, because I'm still feeling very traumatized. And, you know, who am I? So, but it turns out, you know, people just tend to trust me. And so I honor that. And so I learned that, you know, creating a safe space, a safe container for people to just speak is really, really important, whether they're coming in for a treatment or you're just in conversation with somebody. The feeling of safety is probably the core thing that people need to feel in order to even have the courage to start speaking. Because, you know, trauma is all about fear and not being and not feeling safe, right? So when you create that safe container, people will naturally just, you know, all of their walls that they've put up will start to come down, and, you know, they'll have an emotional release. Lots of times, you know, there'd be intense crying. Sometimes people would get angry. And then I realized I need more tools to help people. So even though I was in my own therapy, I decided to seek out other modalities that had more consciousness around them. And I eventually decided that a traditional massage was not something I wanted to keep doing, because I also felt like it was palliative, especially for chronic conditions. And I thought, well, that means I'd be profiting off of pain, and that karmically seemed really wrong. So I decided to get certified in other modalities where, one, clients didn't have to take their clothes off, which I think is actually really helpful when it comes to trauma, where the client will usually stay awake and conscious during their session so that there can be a dialogue happening, whether we're just trying to work out a muscle knot or if some sort of trauma has come up and more somatic work needs to happen. And then eventually I found Ayurveda, the system of medicine that comes from India, where food is medicine and lifestyle is medicine. Now, what's great about Ayurveda is it creates such an incredible foundation. And I found this to be super helpful as I was getting into the really deeper aspects of some of my trauma that I was healing. And I originally sought out Ayurveda as a way to help myself, but it turns out that basically any healing modality you can bring into your practice if you're in the healing profession. And so I naturally, you know, would be excited about it. I talked to clients about it. And, you know, I started out as a counselor, and I'll be finishing up my dissertation in the next 3 months. So I'll be a doctor of Ayurveda. But through all of that, and through the 20 years now that it's been of seeing clients as well as doing my own work, I decided to write my book during COVID. One, because I felt like there's a lot of information and experience is the highest form of knowledge. And so I had done a few podcasts before I ever wrote my book and got such great feedback that I felt like, okay, I think now's the time to write about it. And I was also in a marriage at the time that was a narcissistic empath relationship. And I felt that this was the only way that I could communicate to my now ex-partner that I'm actually quite aware of a lot of what's going on without feeling like there would be too much of a threat, you know, towards me. And it was through actually that process that's what actually finally started the divorce process. You know, I started noticing the more of that behavior that was coming towards me, and it became so overt that I was like, I can't even like pretend like this isn't happening anymore. So the book has been amazing. In fact, this morning I woke up and there was a woman who, I think she's in Florida, and she's a PTSD yoga instructor. And she said, you know, I just finished reading your book and I just want to thank you, you know, and she went on and on about how it helped her. And for me, I think that is the absolute most important. It's really not about making money or anything like that, because for me, the true joy that I get is more on a heart level. When I get those messages, like who doesn't want to wake up to that? You know what I mean? Just to know that somebody's life changed because they read the book and then they did the workbook, and now she's going to refer it to the center where she teaches, which focuses on PTSD and vets, you know? Mm. And so I really feel like my dharma or my mission for this life is to continue to go out and speak about what happens to your mind, your heart, and your body when you've had so much trauma. And because you feel very, you feel small, you don't feel abundant, you feel a lack. And so when I created the title Abundance Beyond Trauma, it was more about a feeling that you get. It's also a mindset. And it's not this, I think now they're calling it dysfunctional positivity, or I don't know what they're calling it, but it's not about being always being positive. It's about having the mindset that no matter what you're going through, one, you have to understand you are the healer. So even though I'm in a healing profession, I'm a facilitator who awakens the healer within you, but it's already in you. But your life experience has clouded it or covered it up. So my job is to basically just facilitate a safe container, and using different modalities and different conversations, the adhere process that I created, et cetera, to help you remember that. Because once you remember that, then things just really start speeding up. So I really feel like that's my mission, is to really revolutionize how we relate harmoniously between the heart and mind, because that's what gets disconnected in trauma. And that's how I created the adhere process, which has been developing over the last 20 years, is to help people come into integration between their heart and mind, find all of those aspects that they disconnected from because the trauma was so intense. You know, whether you call it disassociation, disconnect, it's all a very similar theory. The idea is find those parts that are stuck in a trauma trigger time loop. Find them, make friends with them, heal them. And this is all you, right? So you're coming in, whether you need to be your own mother, your own father, your own husband, whatever, and you are healing those parts of yourself. And then you are able to integrate those parts of yourself. And then there's more of you available, which is again, more abundance.
You're a great speaker.
Oh, thank you.
Hey listeners, so sorry for the interruption. I'd like to tell you about Uncovering the Mysteries of Kabbalah, an amazing opportunity to be mentored by one of Sense of Soul's affiliates, Rabbi Matthew Ponak. If you've listened to my prior episodes with him, then you know he has a ton of wisdom to share, and he's offering Sense of Soul listeners a special discount to take a deep and personalized dive into Kabbalah and the unfolding of your own personal journey. If you're interested, go to MatthewPonak.com/senseofsoul. That's MatthewPonak.com/senseofsoul to learn more and sign up. Now back to our amazing guest.
I can totally relate. You know, I became a massage therapist after my first divorce, and it was because I was like, what am I going to do? I can't go to school for like 4 years. I've got three little kids and I'm living with my parents at the time. And, you know, after I left, but I too came to the place where I was like, I felt like I was rubbing people's stress and it just was like not working. I'm just continuing to rub your stress and it keeps coming back like a memory foam bed, you know, that proprioception. And I also realized there were times of that somato emotional release when the body would release and all of a sudden there'd be, you know, this major breakthrough for them. I started to put that together and started to seek other modalities too, and felt that cranial sacral therapy was more effective. Yeah. You know, Reiki was definitely more effective. And these were ways that I could, like you said, facilitate a space for them, right? To help them reclaim their power. It wasn't me doing it. I was giving them the space to be able to connect with that. I think that, you know, what you said about the safe space is so true.
Yeah. And I think too, when we create safe spaces that have no judgment and allow people to just speak, you know, whether they were the traumatized or the traumatizer, I think that's huge because everything needs to be seen. True change cannot happen until we are courageous enough to see every part of ourselves. And I just saw a video the other day of someone saying that the most powerful energy is authenticity.
Isn't that incredible? And you know, it beat like love, which goes to show you how we are not loving unconditionally.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that starts with oneself as well.
No, that's
true. I love you. I've got all this self-love as long as I can fit into my jeans, right? Or that I look good, or that, I'm winning at life. But the minute, something happens, you're back to self-hating. And if we can't love ourselves unconditionally, then how are we, loving outside of ourselves? Yeah. I love you as long as this. I love this country as long as this.
Yeah.
I love my kids as long as you guys are getting good grades. I mean, what?
Right.
I'm guilty of it. That's how I know it,
Well, I think we all are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all are.
Yeah, I was going to say, my oldest son, I know that he felt the most love when he had fans behind him and cheering him on, and he was getting those home runs. And mom was posting pictures on Facebook of all of his accomplishments.
Yeah.
But what about when you don't have any more fans? You don't have those accomplishments.
Yeah.
I think that we need to maybe redefine love a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And it's only because, like you said earlier, we've been passed down this pattern of, be the best, have the most.
Yep. What I have found is, obviously I understand, how to live homeless. And I live a very modest life, but I've been in relationships where there has been money. And what I have noticed in the partners that I were with that had substantial finances was it seems like a poison. It feels like a poison, at least in those circumstances. Now, it's probably not for everybody, but yeah, I think, when it comes to authenticity, we need to set the monetary aside. Yeah. And this is probably just a little too close to home for me, because I'm, still going through a divorce. And just the idea that there is this whole idea of this holding on to financial is weird to me, but that's what I'm up against. I don't know. I think, we need what we need to survive. We would like to have a comfortable life, but do we really need all the things? Is that really bringing you that authentic happiness? Because I'm my most happy when I'm with people. There are no things around.
And I was going to ask you that, because in the name of your book, Abundance Beyond Trauma, what does abundance mean to you?
Well, to me, abundance is a mindset. Now, abundance could also bring abundance financially, but that's not at the top of my list by any means. And should that happen at some point, that will be refunneled into furthering the work that I'm doing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's really more about the mindset where there's no more lack mindset. Mm-hmm. I will be happy when, the scale says this today, therefore I'm going to create a lack with my food. Things like that, because people really can feel when you are in that abundant energy. It's like you have everything you need and it's all coming from within. Yeah. Money can't provide that. It can't, right. So it's all about how you feel fulfilled within you. That's really what I mean when I'm saying abundance, because when you've had those traumatic experiences, you feel that lack, like you're not good enough and you're always trying to be better, do more, be more, or that you're not good enough, you're not worthy enough. And that alone, that mindset will actually create dis-ease in the body. So with everything I've learned, Ayurvedically and otherwise, 99% of disease actually begins in your mind. Mm. Well, that also means that we have the ability to heal ourselves through our mind. And I know I'm not the first person to talk about this. There are a lot of others out there. For example, I have incredibly low ferritin levels, which is a form of iron. And so today I'm actually going in for my first iron infusion. So what I've started doing is when I eat and when I go to bed, I tell myself I'm healthy and I absorb nutrients, because ferritin is about absorbing nutrients. And so my body, for whatever reason, is not absorbing. But when I also look at what I've gone through, along with eating disorders and things like that, it makes sense that my body is I'm not quite sure what to do with these nutrients, because first you tell me I should eat them and then you are upset that you eat them. You know what I mean? So when you look at the inner dialogue, it makes sense that, over time, now my body's starting to show long-term signs of that type of imbalance. You know, so from an abundant mindset, if I believe that I have everything I need within me, then all I need to do is keep giving myself that information. And obviously it's to a point where now I need medical treatment, but it's all beginning in our mind. Now I point to the head because in the Western culture, this is where we observe our mind and feel that our mind resides. But actually, from an Eastern philosophical perspective, the heart or the mind actually resides in the heart.
Well, and I had Howard Eisenberg on, Brilliant Mind himself.
Yeah.
And he actually discussed a lot that there are more pathways, neural pathways in your heart going to your mind than there is vice versa. When we also have a gut brain.
Yeah.
But, and I love how there's, there's always like this backed up, like ancient text somewhere or ancient theory or religion or practice that backs it up. So yeah. It's like science is catching up. That's what I'm finding now. It's so funny to me.
Well, and one of the ancient scholars named Chatika through Ayurveda states mm-hmm. that the seed of consciousness resides in the heart. So it makes sense that authenticity, mm-hmm. which can only come through the heart, would be the most powerful energy that we're experiencing.
Wow. And I would agree on an energetic level, you know, being a Reiki master, it's by far the most powerful and most abundant in energy.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm always saying share some of that energy that you got in your heart with the rest of your body, you know, share right. it with your root and the other energy centers when, yeah. you know, you have pain. And yeah. actually I got so good at it that I actually was bypassing the why of that pain. And so I think it's very interesting. I'm like a superhero, just pain, laser it out. But, you know, sitting with that pain and asking it, like, what do you need? Why are you here? You know, where did you come from? I think is really important that we don't bypass that.
I totally agree.
Yeah. So, and usually there is something, you know, something maybe you know, stubbed your toe really hard as you were going through a divorce, and now you have some sort of chronic pain in your toe, right?
No, that when you were little, right?
I'm sure it does. Yep. But you know, it is sometimes connected.
Yeah, and we know that the big toe—if you don't have the big toe—you can't walk on that foot. So if it happened during a divorce, like there's just so much that could be extracted from that.
Yeah, you're right. It probably has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, the feet are so important, right?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's, we're all so important. Every single part of us, it's so divine, but it is like when you're able to understand your body and really connect with it in that way, it is like a reclaiming of your own power.
Yes. Yeah. And because you feel more abundant, the more you reclaim. That's why I created the Adhere process. It shows you in my book and my workbook how to go in and find those parts of yourself. But I do encourage people, like if that feels like it's too much, because sometimes people are afraid, like, well, what am I going to see? What am I going to discover? And when you're first starting out, that is a super scary process. So find a facilitator or a practitioner, somebody that will support you so that you don't get quote unquote lost in your own psyche and your own story. But the more you reclaim, the more abundant you feel. I had someone who, you know, just told me recently, they're like, I can't believe that you're 45. You look so young. And I said, I feel so young, but I feel too. Young because I've reclaimed so much of my inner child. So, you know, for so many, she was just kind of wandering out in the ether somewhere, but, you know, wondering like, when is this woman going to come reclaim me? And once I finally did, I'm like, well, I got time, you know, I need to make up for this. So, you know, this trip to Disneyland, it was incredible. I was just a big kid. I didn't have, you know, kids of my own that I needed to, you know, keep an eye on or anything. So I was able to just really like go on these rides. And remember when my grandmother, who was a foundational piece for me, when she would take us, you know, to Disneyland and things like that, like they're just, I just find that I am living life in a way where I am in awe every day, you know? And when I see my grandkids and they're like, ooh, wow. You know, I'm like, yes. Ooh, wow. You know, and see if we can foster more of that, that curiosity and keeping our little ones intact, you know, and hopefully they don't have to go through as much trauma as we've gone through and won't have as many disconnected parts. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's beautiful. That's my hope too.
Yeah.
I think it's so ironic that here we are as adults trying to be more like children, trying to be more present like children, trying to have wonder and curiosity and, you know, more acceptance like they do. And it's amazing.
Well, it's so bass ackwards if you think about it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we should be coming out of the birth canal. And I mean, I saw some post where it said the moment you're born, you're given a name, you're given a religion, you know, and there's all these labels the moment you come out, instead of just letting the child just be, right? What is the name that is coming forward once you get to know the child after they're born? You know, things like that. Now, that was not my, you know, level of awareness, obviously, when I had kids, but it got me thinking. I was like, yeah, why do we do this? We're automatically just inserting them into a system that, honestly, I mean, the system's broken. We've got so many issues with religious wars and all this other stuff.
Mind-blowing. You know, I did that with my older kids, you know, and I still today talk about that because it sounds so crazy now, you know, that I would actually choose their spiritual path and their beliefs.
Right.
Yeah, definitely a huge difference, you know, with my Gen Z children than my younger, who is Generation Alpha?
I can't even keep up these days. My kids will usually educate me about that.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah, you're so right. It hit me and I was like, even just impermanence of allowing, you know, one to have one's journey and me to have my journey and knowing that, you know, at any moment anything could change and, you know, not being so attached, you know, to that and allowing, you know, those seasons just to change as they will.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they may all become Mormon. Who knows? I have no idea.
Who knows? Yeah.
But if they do, they do.
Right.
In fact, my oldest son had a very valid point not too long ago. He said, gosh, you know, why did you teach us all of these things when we were little and now you have completely different beliefs,
right?
And it's confusing, and it was really valid. I don't believe that, you know, the stories of Jesus were bad. I think they were good. I just don't think that it was so much about having to believe in him or else. It was more to be like him. But you know, it's everyone's journey to figure that out.
That's true. I remember when it was shortly after I started my healing journey about 20 years ago that growing up, I was really confused. I was like, why do we go to church? Why do we claim we're Christians when all this stuff is going on at home, which is the opposite of what we're learning at church?
Right.
And so, yeah, it was about 20 years ago where when I still had a relationship with my parents, I told my mother, I said, I can no longer claim or deny this phrase that Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. And, you know, she, you know, gave me this long spiel. And I thought, you know, you of all people are not living a life that supposedly is what a Christian should be living. And it's for that reason and for my own journey that I need to question everything I've been told to believe. Otherwise, I'm not really going to get to know who I am. I know who I am based on what I've been told. And so I think we spend a lot of our lives when we're courageous enough trying to unlearn what we've learned so that we can get to our true essence. And then try to live from that, you know, authentic, true place. That may look like a Buddhist. That may look like nothing at all.
Right.
You know?
Whatever. Yeah. How much have I actually experienced to be my truth?
Yeah.
But everything else was just ridiculous. This is what you're supposed to be. This is what you're supposed to do. You know, this is what success looks like. This is what a good mom looks like. A good wife.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it's true. Authenticity is the most highest of vibrations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's been so many definitions around what this word is, love. You know, I think it's losing its vibration, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I think it's moving into authenticity and just being real. You know, how many times did you hear I love you from the person who abused you?
Yeah. Or just like, how you doing?
Right.
You know, when someone says, how are you?
You're not feeling it. Don't say it.
Right. It's lost its authenticity. That's sad.
Yeah.
But authenticity is the new love.
No, I totally agree. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, love it. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I love your book and I love your purpose and why you're sharing it. I can feel the authenticity.
Thank you.
Everybody, where they can work with you and where they can find your book.
Yes. So you can go to goodbyetension.com and I offer services in person or online. The link to Abundance Beyond Trauma is also there. You'd have to go onto Amazon to find the workbook, the Abundance Beyond Trauma workbook. And anyone who listens to this podcast, if they go to my website under the contact page and send me a contact, let me know that they heard this, then I'll send them a free copy of the I'm Triggered Pocket Guide, which can help get you out of a triggered state very quickly. And then also show you the adhere process if you want to look at, well, why did you get triggered? But usually the first three steps will at least get you out of a triggered state. So your brain will start working again. So you can move forward with whatever it is you're doing.
Nice. I like that. Yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah. I think that's a very important thing is to be aware of our triggers.
Yeah. And the workbook will take you through, you know, how do you know when you're triggered, discovering the exact moment that you're triggered, and then diving deeper into that. And that's also, you know, something that we could do online or in person, you know, depending on your needs.
Nice. Cause that's what I think. It's like, once you're aware of them, I think it is good to work with somebody to help you kind of figure out what to do with them then.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely seek somebody for that and they can seek Janine. So,
yeah. Well, thank you so much. It was an honor to be a guest on your show.
Thank you too. Thanks for listening to Sense of Soul podcast. And thanks to our special guests for joining me. If you want more of Sense of Soul, check out my website at www.mysenseofsoul.com, where you can work with me one-on-one or help support Sense of Soul podcast by donating to my coffee fund. Thanks for listening.